Accession number 9955, reel number 14.
Mr. Calvert, reel 14. You were in England right through 1917 into 1918. What happened then?
Well, in 1917, there was a contingent of us, a company, made up from all those who'd been in the Battle of the Somme. We were sent to Kensington Barracks, and we just did the usual guard of the barracks, and I think we were sent there because Chelsea barracks were absolutely full. I couldn't take any more, and they sent us out a kind of a rest period, and we enjoyed it, except I got into trouble there because I was late coming in at night, and I was put on a charge and 3 days CB.
Why were you late?
I think we'd forgot the distance we had to travel, which was easily done in London. And instead of, we paraded on two occasions. On the last occasion, the sergeant decided he'd have a kit inspection to see if we were carrying a full marching order, which meant everything necessary. I was short. But fortunately I was by a barrack room window, and what I was short was passed to me from the chaps in the barrack room, so I had a full kit. Otherwise I should have had a drill for every item missing. That was the sort of comradeship which counted.
Why were you short? Did you just not pack it? Or
didn't pack it. It were idleness. Just get away with it, which you couldn't. So,
how long were you at Kensington?
A month, just 1 month. It was one of the nicest parts of 1918.
So it went through into 1918, that this month?
I shouldn't say it. 1917. The nicest part of 1917. So we marched back to join the battalion. And there were so many in the barrack rooms, we had to go into what was called, right at the top of the barracks, pipe clay room, where they used to go up with their equipment for pipe claying, that white stuff they put on your belt and pouches. I went to the dust it made, those windows which would carry it out, and you wouldn't make a mess in the barrack room. We went up there, about eight of us. It was a nice place to be in because we were never called upon for fatigues. We were forgotten. Never did a parade for about 3 weeks. They didn't know we were there, but we got rations. I think that came about, as was later said, by Lloyd George refusing to allow all the troops available to leave England. He made them, the generals, he wouldn't allow them to have the troops to start another offensive. And that's why I think the big breakthrough occurred in 1918.
Now, you seem to be becoming a bit of an old soldier in one sense. You didn't pack your kit.
That's
and,
right.
You managed to get in this room and and you missed parades. Were you finding yourself an old soldier and knew when and how to swing the lead? Was that the way you felt? Or
yes, I was beginning to realise that you could do a bit of what we call lead swinging. And at times it paid off. It avoided a lot of duties by doing that, which probably you thought it wasn't your turn.
Have you got any other examples of methods you used to swing the lead?
Well, there was another one when a sergeant came in the barrack room, looked round, and you, and he looked at me, he said, "You'll be waiting a commission, won't you?" I just nodded. I don't know why, unless he thought didn't need to be taken to do this, which was a coal job, taking coal to the various places for boilers and that. So I avoided that by just nodding my head. Mind you, I was never anything in that line. But that was the sort of thing which you got used to, what they asked. In the barrack room, are you a good pianist? Can you play the piano? Chap, oh yes, right, you're just the man we want. There's a piano to be moved. Come on, you want a lot more. All that sort of trickery questions, I call them. Just to get men to say they could do something and, well, you know about it, you're the person we want to help.
So you'd always keep quiet?
Yes, that's why I never volunteered.
Right, now, into 1918 then we are now, and you would be coming up to the age when you were entitled to be, well, and you wanted to be sent back, I understand.
Yes, I was anxious to go. I got a bit weary of barrack room and drilling and all that, got monotonous. So what really happened was about February, they started, there was a small draft went out, not many, and that eased, of course, the pressure in the barracks. And then the day came when the Duke of Connaught, who was colonel of the regiment, called us all together, it was in March, and said, things are very serious in France. The British army's been badly mauled and they're beginning to retreat, and when you go there, you must not give ground, that sort of talk. So in 24 hours we'd been loaded up with
equipment. How did you feel about that sort of speech? I mean, the Duke of Connaught comes and tells you that.
We knew it was serious. We knew things were very serious in France by little information which had probably slipped through from War Office and travelled down.
Did you feel, did his appeal not to give ground, did that sort of appeal, did it appeal to you really?
Well, yes, we knew if we were told to stay in a place, you'd got to. You know, what happened, you'd got to stop until you were told to leave it. So, we were, in 24 hours, we were being sorted out, and we went in two contingents.
Were you given any extra kit, or special kit?
No, we left rifles behind. We just went with the usual equipment you went with on a draft to join a battalion, and we went in two contingents down to Waterloo Station, where some relatives who live locally were able to come and see the men fork off, and they went to Southampton into the dock while it was dark, and then onto the transport and in France the next morning, and marched up to the camp before lunchtime. We were given a meal there and lined up. And the fortunate thing for me was that instead of being number one on parade, or number two or three, or 20 or 30 or 40, I was about number 80, 90 in the first contingent. And they came along, never asking which battalion you went to, things were so vital to get you in the line as quick as possible. They came along and said, 1st Battalion, 2nd Battalion, 3rd Battalion, 4th Battalion. And I was fortunate, 2nd Battalion. Now, normally I should have gone back to the 4th, which had left. And we were on the way next morning, and the 4th Battalion, the contingents who joined them, of course, came in for that nasty mauling when they were cut off, and they never came as a fighting force during the rest of the war. They lost practically all except, I think, brigade headquarters and some of them the battalion headquarters. Some transport.
You know someone, don't you, who's still alive? Who?
Yes, Mr. Spence. What part he took there, I don't know, but I think he, for the rest of the war, served in what was just a few men of the 4th Battalion who got away from their quarters.
Now, you didn't get any training then at this Le Havre camp?
None at all. We were all, biggest part were, it should be more or less, we were, I'd been out before and were trained men and...
Did you feel a bit rusty? I mean, you hadn't been out for a year and a half.
No, it was just the same routine.
So you were confident you could cope?
Yes, yes, sir.
So you were sent to the 2nd Battalion, which is in the 1st Guards Brigade, I think.
That's right.
Where were they when you joined them? And what was your reception?
I just forget the name. It was a camp. I don't know the area. But I think we were covering St. Paul area, which was... I think we'd lost some of the main railway centres for goods, for supplies and all that. And I think we were somewhere covering St. Paul, which was the next vital link in the railway line from the Channel ports, was that area. And I was number one leading this draft, and there were duckboards, and they were greasy, and I was... taking it very gentle. Instead of going as quick as I should have done on parade, I was probably a bit on the slack side, and there was a tent where we was halted, and out came the splendid figure of the regimental sergeant major. First thing he did, pointed at me. He must have been looking from somewhere else. I haven't had a hole in the tent to watch out, you never know. Take his name and number and report him for idle on parade. And they call him Tabby Beard for his nickname. Tabby Beard, Regimental Sergeant Major. He finished up as a major because he kept in after the war.
That came from his beard, the colour of his beard, did it? Or?
No, his name was Beard, Tabby Beard. They called him Tabby because he was a bit... on the feet at times, you were a bit, they call it Tabby Feet, I believe. And that was his nickname, Tabby. See how they find things out. So I got 3 days mounting the little built-up place where there was a Lewis gun and a gas thing. It was out in the, right out in the area where it had been rest areas for the military... coming from
the line. So you weren't in trenches at all, or were you?
No, there were no trenches there then. We just, the battalion were all in the open, more or less. So
what did you think of this reception? Not a good start.
I thought, well, that's what they generally do. They generally inflict discipline straight away on somebody to let you know, who's who? I'm the sergeant major. You'll know it now. And everybody, of course, looked and knew him. It's one of the old tricks, isn't it, of making yourself known, like going in a room and standing in the entrance and calling out to one another. Everybody looks at the entrance, don't they? But if you went in the far end, nobody would notice you much. So it's always been done as that, I suppose.
So you didn't mind?
No, I didn't bother.
Well, you say you were put on with the gas shell, that's the gas alarm.
Yes.
And the Lewis gun. Is this the Lewis gun you mentioned much earlier, which was on anti-aircraft?
Yes, it was. You had the panniers loaded. Yeah, it was loaded and it was on a swivel affair, and you were supposed to, if a low-flying German aircraft must have let go of it. Of course, I don't think you could do any damage unless it came very low. But probably there'd be one or two of the those bullets which carry a...
tracer.
Tracer bullet, show you the direction of your shoot.
It never actually happened while you were on it, I presume.
No, no.
Had you been trained at all in the Lewis?
Yes, I was number two at one time, so I understood the workings.
When were you trained in that?
At sometime in 19... 17.
You'd been trained in England?
I think we'd been, yes, on a light, on the light machine gun. In case they were knocked over, you could take the place.
So, well, you weren't, yes.
I think that was the idea. So many of you knew how to work a machine gun or a Lewis gun and knew just exactly what to look for in a stoppage.
Just going back to then, that how were you trained in the Lewis gun? What methods did they use?
They just had one in the barrack room, and it was just stripped down, and then it, we watched them reassemble it, and then they'd ask one of you to have a see what you could do. You got used to it.
What, did you have practical experience in loading and firing it?
No. No, they're all dummy rounds, you see. But you could feel the weight and that, and the go into the breech and all that, and you could work them that way.
So it was just a theoretical course?
Yes, it was to make sure that you could, in emergency, probably take over and man a machine gun. But the Lewis gun, to my mind, was a very good gun, except for one thing, stoppages. It was apt to stop, and sometimes took a little time to get it going again.
Were you assigned to a Lewis gun when you got to this? I mean, you were on this as a punishment, but were you assigned to a Lewis gun team when you got to the battalion, or were you just a...
Yes, later on I came number two.
But not at this time?
No, when I got into the company proper, and Sergeant... knew I'd previous experience, because by then men, trained men, were beginning to become casualties, and we were left with a few who had no experience and couldn't handle a machine gun.
Right, we'll come to that then. Now, this first period, which company were you assigned to?
Number two company, I think it was.
No, it was two. You were in front of St. Paul?
Yes.
And what
not right in front, but in the area to defend it.
And what were you? How long were you there, and what were you actually doing?
Well, we took over some trenches near Mark Cohen, I think it was, somewhere in that area. And there was a big English aerodrome in the where we were, and there was a big, looked like the... about half a mile away, there was a big hangars. We were in very low trenches. There were no barbed wire, and right in front of us were one huge stretch of grassland.
And where were the Germans?
Well, we didn't know. We'd gone up there, and we took over this area, and we told... that's where we had to stop, and if we were attacked, we hadn't to give ground. With no artillery, all the guns had been captured, more or less, apart from, I think, the Australian divisions had been the ones that weren't in the line, and they'd kept in reserve. Well, he sent his observation balloon up, did the German, and they spotted where we were, and of course then we got a few shells.
Was it very different being in shallow trenches from your previous?
Yes. And I was out a touch of dysentery then. And it was stamp two. I couldn't wait any longer. I left my rifle and bayonet and got over into a shell hole just at back to relieve myself. And just then Sergeant Major came round. Sergeant Major Watkinson. I'll never forget him. They waited with the officer when he come back. I thought I'd nipped off, I know. Of course, I was just getting my equipment right, and said to the sergeant to report him through the officer for not being present at stand two. I got another 3 days for that, mounting on the old, when we got out on the old gun. Well, I mean, there's no redress, is there? I couldn't wait. I had to go, but I'd made the mistake. They wouldn't have known if I'd taken my rifle and bayonet, and that was the thing I should have done. I was really at fault. when I was in such a hurry to get my equipment. We were all suffering from something in that period, you know.
There'd be no latrines there either.
No, you had to find shallow, though, nothing. No, further on the left, we had the Irish Guards. I don't know, we're on the right at that time. And I think we're more or less two battalions, more just in probably in one line, and the flanks probably, shall we say, not touched, left open.
Were you attacked at all during this time?
Not that time, but later on there were eight waves of them seen coming over in the distance. And there was an Australian battery galloped up, got into action straight away just behind us, and over the open sights, and that cured them. I don't think they were attacking, I think they were thinking that there were nothing to attack. I think they couldn't see no guns, they couldn't find, there were no gunfire from us. We were kept quiet. They didn't know there were anybody there, you see, and they set off, a long way off, in like, just lines after another, probably thinking it was just a walkthrough, but unfortunately for them it wasn't. They never got within rifle fire of us. They were broken up by this artillery. I think as soon as they knew there were a defence, they just took cover and stopped there.
How long were you in these shallow trenches in there at this time?
About 3 days.
And then where did you go?
We went further back and had more reinforcements join us, and instead of being about 800 or 900 strong as a battalion should be all in, I think we got down to about 600. And then it was constantly holding trenches and digging in, and then going back for a rest period while other troops took over.
You weren't retreating in now anymore?
No. No, we advanced a bit. Took, I think, Flesh Quiry's village, I think. We got somewhere around that area. That was all, that had been 20 miles behind the German line at one time where we were. English aerodrome, you can guess it was.
20 miles behind our line?
Well, where the Germans had been, we were 20 miles from the German line. I should think, a fair distance. And then gradually as we got more reinforcements, I suppose, we were engaged in just holding the line and finding out where he was, going on patrols and all that sort of thing. And I think it shot his bolt by then. His casualties had been too heavy, and he hadn't got the ground and objectives, which of course were the channel ports, I believe. So
how long were you doing this? You got out there in late March, early April?
June, into July. About, they were trying to equip everybody with everything what was necessary, like the supporting troops and all that, because they'd lost all the equipment now. So we were just holding for a time and searching out where the German line was, and then the artillery were beginning to get back into able to start giving you support. And
you had some American troops with you for a while then, didn't
they?
You
came with us for a time in some of these areas we were in. There was a big wood that's not far off. I can remember that because they were always sending shrapnel over it. It was in a rear area, not actually in the fighting zone, but in a rear area. We were there getting sorted out and all things at rifles examined and by the ordnance people, and these Americans came.
How many?
I think there was probably a brigade. And they just sent so many. I think there were a sergeant, 8 or 9 men came. I think they were Detroit Rifles. They were well-built men. There's more here than they should have, you know.
Beer bellies.
Yeah, well dressed, beautiful clothing, good equipment, and well groomed. Nothing. Come straight out from the transport up the line, and we took them into the trenches with us, and there were two or three with me in the section I was in, and there was a sergeant who was further down and some more, and they'd been told not to go out from our trenches unless they told the company on the right and the company on the left, in other words the flank men, and they'd pass it on if there was anybody, not to shoot at any patrol, anybody coming in, crawling in or walking in done in the darkness, but to challenge and make sure they did that before they did any shooting. Well, this American sergeant took two or three of them out looking for souvenirs. We told him there weren't any, there were nothing worth having, but he would go out to see if he could get it. And unluckily they got it front at machine gun of the Irish Guards, and they shot him. The sergeant, I think, had lost his leg, what I heard, and the others were wounded. That, you see, was still not listening. Yeah, they were a bit that way with the American troops. They probably had a different training, and what we told them was probably entirely different. Probably they'd had training from the French, more or less.
What were they like? Did you like them?
Yes, they were all right. They were all right, but they were too self-confident. In other words, they knew it and they wouldn't listen to what you had to say. No, they were unfortunate that they were pushed into these areas without the lengthy training which I think should have been given to them. You see, we were pretty well trained into all the ways of the German. They went then further south from there. They moved down to the French zone. You see, they were more in touch with the French than they were with us, because I suppose they are back to when the French helped the revolution in America. You know, it'd be some of the schooling, wouldn't it? So they really had more for a Frenchman as a soldier than they had for a Englishman, a Scotsman, or a Welshman as a English, British, American mixture. Didn't really take place.
During this period when you were sort of, the line was being established and it was all settling down, did you go on any patrols? Because you hadn't done much of that before.
Yes, but it was just going out at night, just...
How was the patrol organised?
Well, there'd be... probably be the officer, if it was officer patrol, there'd be an officer leading it, there'd be a sergeant, couple of corporals, that were 30 men. But the training we received for patrolling was such that a lot of it were trickery. You set off in a formation, the officer here. You didn't carry a rifle. You had an entrenching tool or something to bash a steel helmet. You'd have the sergeant, you'd have a corporal somewhere near, and you'd be in this, and they'd go that way. Now, if they come across, had a German patrol, knew there was one here, the word would be passed for flanks to move out. So you moved out, and encircle the Germans if you could. And then sometimes, if the Germans were moving this way, you would have to start, the officer would have to start bringing you back and leave the flanks open so the Germans had come in, and that was another way. There were all sorts of tricks done to try and, the main thing was to try and capture Germans, to get to know the division and what sort of troops were facing you, because it all helped in an attack if you knew they were good troops or whether they were poor, because as you know, you did get good divisions and poor divisions in the armies. Always.